Chapter 2. He Who Has Accomplished His Goal. Who was the Buddha, and how had such a being come to exist? Over 2,600 years ago, a clan named Shakya ruled one of the many small kingdoms in an area that is now in the foothills of Nepal. The king's given name was Suddhodana, and his family name was Gautama. One night, his wife, Queen Maya, had a dream, which she related to her husband. When dream interpreters were brought to the palace, they said the dream foretold the queen bearing a son who would either be a great king or a universal teacher. After the prince was born, he was named Siddhartha, which means he who has accomplished his goal. A revered ascetic, Master Asita, came to the palace to see the child. First, a smile brightened his face when he saw the new prince. But then, a tear fell from his eye and rolled slowly down his face. He began to weep, with more tears streaming down. Greatly concerned, the king asked if some terrible misfortune was to befall his son. Master Asita replied, "No. On the contrary, the child would grow up to one day find the way to enlightenment. But he, Asita, would no longer be alive." And so he wept. Just a few days after Siddhartha's birth, the queen died, and the prince was raised by his aunt, the king's second wife. She lovingly cared for Siddhartha as if he were her own son. When Siddhartha was 9 years old, he went to the annual plowing ceremony. He saw the panting oxen being lashed by their sweating handlers while the sun blazed overhead. And as the plows tore into the earth, he saw the worms being cut up by the plowing. Small birds swooped down to devour the writhing creatures. A larger bird flew down and caught a smaller one. Siddhartha contemplated what he had just seen. Even as a child, he was becoming aware of the harsh realities of life. All living beings kill one another to survive, and in this there is suffering. As Siddhartha grew up, he was provided with everything a young prince could have, the finest possessions, the most learned teachers, and a beautiful palace in which to live. But instead of becoming spoiled, his humble demeanor inspired trust in others. Through it all, he remained respectful and gentle towards all. And as time passed, his concern for the welfare of others took root and began to grow stronger. In an effort to bring his pensive son's thoughts back to a more worldly existence, as well as to his princely responsibilities as the future king, the king decided that Siddhartha needed to get married. Various gatherings of young people were arranged, and one young woman in particular, Siddhartha's cousin, the Princess Yashodhara, stood out from the others. She was not only beautiful in appearance, but had inner strength as well. Like Siddhartha, she was thoughtful and cared deeply for those who suffered from poverty and illness. The prince and princess were married. They lived in three palaces. They enjoyed the summer in a palace made of cool marble. In the winter, they stayed warm in a palace made of fragrant wood. The monsoon season was passed comfortably in a brick palace with a high green tile roof. Siddhartha and Yashodhara were provided with everything they could have wanted. They were privileged with the finest possessions. Musicians and dancers were housed in the palaces to entertain the royal couple. Then came the events that are known as the Four Sights. This account tells of how the sheltered prince is said to have encountered for the first time the reality of the universal hardships of old age, sickness, and death, in spite of his father's attempts to shield him from them. He also saw a monk, a religious seeker of truth, who radiated peace and serenity. Siddhartha learned that not only animals suffer, but that all of humanity is subject to aging, sickness, death, and separation from loved ones. Siddhartha felt the pain and loss undergone by all beings, but he could do nothing to save his people from the inevitable pain that lay in their future. More and more, this gentle, contemplative young man found himself being drawn into this universal problem. He wanted, with all his heart, to find the way to end the pain for all beings. Siddhartha was deeply troubled. Although he was a skilled warrior, he knew he could not solve humanity's problems by warfare. Although he was the future king, he knew he could not end the distress of others through political decisions alone. The learned prince became increasingly aware that he could not resolve suffering through worldly knowledge. More than ever, Siddhartha felt questions arise within him. How does one find lasting peace? How does one move beyond the reach of illness and death? How does one find the way for all beings? It was the fourth encounter, the memory of that serene monk, that gave Siddhartha hope that there was an answer out there, somewhere. One morning, Siddhartha went to his father and requested permission to leave home to become a monk. King Suddhodana must have known that this day might come, but so soon. Could Siddhartha not wait? His father sincerely respected the tradition of renouncing one's worldly life to seek a more spiritual one. But this was usually done when one was older, not when one has a young family and so many responsibilities as the future king. Siddhartha persisted, for his father could not end Siddhartha's suffering any more than Siddhartha could end his father's. Siddhartha assured his father that he would return when he had found the way. That night, Siddhartha went to his quarters. He gazed intensely at his sleeping newborn son. Yashodhara also seemed to be asleep. He quietly left the room. He loved them intensely, so he had to do whatever he could to find the way to free them from pain and distress. Knowing that they would be lovingly taken care of, Siddhartha quietly slipped out of the palace to find the way to end suffering for them, for those he was responsible for all beings. Siddhartha was a man with everything: youth, wealth, position. He was admired for his cleverness and bravery, as well as his wisdom. He had proven himself to be the greatest warrior in the matches that were held in the kingdom. But he was also known for his kind heart. Siddhartha had a beautiful wife who loved him and whom he loved. She had given birth to their son, but he realized that with all that he possessed and with all that he knew, he could not protect them from aging, sickness, and death. Siddhartha renounced his existence as a prince who, by his royal birth, unmatched capabilities, and great strength of character, would have been a great king, and instead became Gautama, a wandering seeker of the way. He gave up material security and future power to live under the trees and to forage and beg for his food. He rejected fine clothes and jewels, to wear cast-off rags. He relinquished fleeting worldly love to search for the way to permanent love and liberation, which no man had found. When Gautama learned that Master Alarakalama, a highly respected teacher, was nearby, he made his way to the master's center. Gautama was accepted as a student and quickly mastered the practice he was given. He went back to the master, who then taught him how to attain the next meditative state. But even the attainment of this state did not provide the answers to Gautama's questions of how to end the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth, and how to liberate humanity from pain and distress. Gautama gratefully thanked the master for his teachings and declined an invitation to teach alongside him. He respectfully took his leave and continued to practice and search for the answers. After a while, he learned that another teacher, Master Udakaramaputta, was close by. Gautama went to him and requested to become a student. This time as well, he quickly learned from his teacher. He transcended all ordinary planes of consciousness and remained in a state of great tranquility. But when he came out of meditation, the problems of life and death were still there. He thanked the master for his teachings and politely declined the offer to remain and become the new master upon Master Udakaramaputta's death. At this point, Gautama had practiced under the guidance of two of the most respected teachers of meditation. He had mastered everything they could teach, but he still had not learned how to permanently end suffering. He realized that he had reached the point where he must discover the way himself. After a period of solitary practice, he was joined by 5 ascetics who became his companions. Over the ensuing months, they lived in a group of caves and in nearby forests. As Gautama intensified his practice, he ate only a handful of food a day. Then, Gautama reduced his food intake to less than a mouthful a day. He sat in meditation and ignored the blazing heat and freezing cold. His body became emaciated. His bones were as brittle as dry sticks. His ribs were like exposed rafters, and his vertebrae were like beads on a string. His eyes sank deep into his skull. His hair fell out at his touch. When he touched the skin on his stomach, he could feel his backbone. The 5 ascetics who were with him could not match his rigorous practice. Then, one day while meditating in a cemetery, Gautama suddenly realized that the traditional religious teachings, his attainment of elevated states of meditation, and his practice of extreme austerities had all failed to disclose the solution to end pain and distress for the benefit of all beings. If he died from all his exertions, what would he have accomplished for others? He thought of the peace that he had known in earlier meditations. Mind and body both needed to be healthy to be able to find the way to enlightenment. One's mind needed to be peaceful and focused. One's body needed to be strong and healthy. The next morning, Gautama went to the river to bathe. When he finished, he managed to drag himself up the river bank, but he had only gone a little way when he collapsed from sheer weakness. He might have died had it not been for a passing village girl on her way to make offerings to the forest gods, who gave him some rice milk. As he drank more of the milk, some of his strength gradually returned, and he began to see the unity among all things. Mind and body are one. The wisdom of the universe was to be found in each and every cell. Self-inflicted deprivation was not the answer. There was already enough pain in the world. Gautama decided to give up his austere practices and to live in the forest near the river. He had realized the middle way, which bridges ascetic denial and sensual attachment in a balanced middle ground. His companions saw him eating more food, talking with a girl who sometimes brought it to him, and no longer following the traditional ways of austere practice. They believed that he had abandoned his seeking of the way and returned to worldly pleasures. So the five left him, deeply disappointed at his seeming weakness and lack of resolve. Gautama continued to meditate alone. He realized that everything which came into existence, living and non-living, was interconnected to everything else. Nothing existed on its own. He also understood that nothing was permanent, and that everything was changing continuously.